welcome to this week's edition of An Organic Conversation, a show about food, ecology, stories from the land, nature, sustainability, interconnectedness, relationships, and life itself. We're your hosts, Helge Helberg.
And Mark Mulcahy.
And Sitarani Palomar.
And we are looking at death today, more specifically at funeral services and burials in particular. It's a topic so often not discussed in public, and so we wanted to give it this hour of airtime and look at the culture of death and funerals and its environmental impact and highlight some of the alternatives, such as green or natural burials. And we have some guests from the U.S. and Europe with us today on the show, so I'm very excited. Green burials of life and death today on An Organic Conversation. Sita.
Well, I think that it's nice to give some airtime to this topic because it's not something that people really talk about, like you said, Helga. And as individuals who really try and honor the conscious thing in our entire life, making a conscious decision as our last act on this earth is really beautiful. I think it's really ceremonial and honoring of the life we lived.
Yeah, and you know what? I've never really understood all the pomp and circumstance behind death, and the, you know, I appreciate ritual and passing and honoring people's lives, but I've never understood all the whole, everything that goes into the caskets and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, because I've always thought that I would just be buried in my backyard.
Yes. And actually, that would not be legal.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. Actually, I happen to know that under California law, I actually don't know what it is in all around the country, but there are lots of laws and regulations about death, including that you just can't bury yourself or be buried in your own backyard under that oak tree. That's not allowed.
Oh.
So we will look at all that on this week's show, Green Burials of Life and Death, today on An Organic Conversation.
But first, let's check out those green headlines with Jen Lloyd.
Thank you, Mark. Over 100 new marine species have been discovered in 2011. The California Academy of Sciences announced the discovery of about 140 new species of animals in 2011, marking the continuation of a recent boom of new finds. Especially notable are several new species of sharks and rays, including a variety of angel shark as well as the previously unknown African dwarf saw shark. The last decade has seen the discovery of more new marine species than the last three decades. Merced County Jail's going green. Jails in Merced County, California are going green this year with a brand new solar array. The array will provide up to 70% of the correctional facility's power at peak usage and completely offset its annual consumption, and additionally will save the county almost $14 million over the next 25 years. The complex's lighting systems have also been renovated to be more energy efficient, and the money saved will be used to further upgrade the county's other facilities. And green burials reduce impact post-mortem. So-called green burials are becoming more and more popular in the United States as the environmental costs of traditional burials become clear. U.S. cemeteries use over 30 million feet of hardwood and 150 million pounds of metals and toxic plastics per year, which can leach into the ground and local water supplies. Alternative options, which have seen rapid growth in the past 3 years, include burial in pine boxes or biodegradable shrouds. And those are the green headlines. Back to you, Helga.
Thanks, Jen. Jen Lloyd, thank you for that weekly update of what's going on around the world of green and sustainability. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Helberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
And we'll take a quick break, but stay tuned for our first interview about funerals, the funeral industry, and green burials as an alternative, only here on An Organic Conversation. That and more when we come back right after the break.
Woke up this morning, put on my slippers. I walked in the kitchen and died. And oh, what a feeling when my soul went through the ceiling and on up into heaven I did ride. When I got there, they did say, John, it happened this way. You slipped upon the floor and hit your head. And all the angels say, just before you passed away, that these were the very last words that you said. Please don't bury me down in the cold, cold ground. No, I'd rather have them cut me up and pass me all around. threw my brain in a hurricane.
And we are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
If you are a conscientious citizen of planet Earth, and as a listener most likely you will be, you work hard all of your life to minimize the negative impact you may have on this beautiful planet and to increase the positive impact. Some of us have sworn to never use plastic bottles, while others eat mostly organic and local food, or do both. The opportunities are abundant on how to live a life with fewer CO2 emissions, less trash, more recycling, and more meaningful relationships in all aspects of life. But what is our relationship to death, especially in environmental terms? It was eye-opening to learn how much impact a standard funeral service has on our soil, air, and water. So what is it about that black casket, and how much do we know about green alternatives, for example, natural burials where everything returns back to the earth? Of life and death, green burials, today's topic on An Organic Conversation, and with us now, calling in from the UK, from Winchester, United Kingdom, is Rosie Inman-Cook, the Centre Manager of the Natural Death Centre. Rosie, are you with us?
I am. Good morning. Or should I say good evening?
Good morning.
Oh, my Wednesday has now finished.
It all depends on your perspective and where you're listening to and where you're coming from. Tell us about the history of death, and maybe we should start with your specific work. You're the center manager of the Natural Death Center. What is the Natural Death Center, and what do you do there?
We're a funeral advice charity, and we've been going for 20, well, we're in our 21st year now. It's such a huge topic, I don't know where to start. In your intro, you were saying about being buried in your backyard. Well, luckily, here in Britain, we have the freedom to do exactly that if we so wish.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very
honouring. What happened
honoring.
To all your pioneers who went across the plains and dropped dead or were shot? They buried where they liked. When did this law come in the States? That's bonkers.
It's worth investigating, actually.
So if it's legal, what are you providing through the Natural Death Center?
Well, just that, information, dispelling myths and misapprehensions that are fostered on everybody by the funeral industry, which suits them very well. The things that people think it's the rules, it's the law. You have to use a funeral director. You have to be embalmed if you're going to view the body. You have to transport a body in a hearse. You have to have a coffin. It's all rubbish, absolute nonsense. Well, it is here anyway.
Well, Rosie, it's so glad that you aren't opinionated on this subject.
we empower people. Folk phone me up because they've had a bereavement or they're planning ahead and they want to do things differently. They don't want to spend a fortune on the men in black and they don't want all that pomp that you were referring to earlier. They want something that reflects their lives and or the life of the one they've lost.
It's beautiful to see actually that we see this dropping of conventions and listening to that inner voice of truth, whatever that may be for every single individual person on this planet. We see it in so many aspects of life and areas. Last but not least, the Occupy Now movement. And even that's what I hear in your words, that people, you know, no longer want to go with the convention.
Absolutely. And it's relatively modern. You know, it's a 19th century fashion that has become the norm, and people are, I don't know, it's not brainwashed, but they're just ignorant of the facts on the whole. We're pro-choice. We're not trying to say be prescriptive and say this is how it should be done, but we're just there to help empower and give knowledge to, and educate people, really.
So what is the history of that? What, you know, what changed, or when did something change where people felt like they had to go through the process of death the way that it's done now in the UK and the United States with all these coffins and caskets?
Yeah, guide us through the history, the timeline.
Well, I mean, it's not my area of expertise, but I believe it to be a 19th century fashion the American Civil War, I understand, is behind the modern-day embalming because they wanted to get bodies back to families, and there was the delay. I mean, 200 years ago here in the UK, and I'm sure in the States as well, families and communities and villages looked after their own dead. It was a more simple, hands-on approach. You had local coffins made from local timber, just as an example, rather than things imported from abroad or made from rainforest hardwoods, you know.
And so I'm also wondering about, you said the embalming, it's not even necessary, right? Because you can cool a body down.
Absolutely.
Using refrigeration or ice?
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, there's a lot of myth about, oh, you shouldn't. The funeral industry seems to think that it's their role to protect us from the reality of death. It's more this continuation of a denial of our own absolute mortality. And you know, whereas, you know, some people might believe in an afterlife, for example. And some people think that you shouldn't go and see your loved one and see them looking dead. And that they should look all pink and plump as if they're about to sit up and say, only joking.
But embalming is as old as, you know, Egyptian traditions.
That's very different sort of embalming.
Talk about that. Why is it different?
Well, I mean, now modern embalming means basically they suck out and blow out all the blood out of the of your body. Your blood volume is taken out and it's replaced with liters of highly toxic chemicals with dyes in it to make you look all pink. And they've just flushed, well, in the UK they do, they just flush your blood down the drains. It's vile.
And how is it compared to the embalming that was done thousands and thousands of years ago?
Oh, well, that was very different. I think my belief is that they desiccated the body in salt and and eviscerated it and extracted the brain out through the nose and all that sort of yucky-do. But, yeah, so very different.
Do we know why? I mean, it was done to honor the gods, right? It was done to preserve the body. How's the culture of embalming somebody now? Is that the same origin?
Purely cosmetic, and mm-hmm. this belief in hygiene. Well, the euphemism is hygienic treatment is what they'll call it. And you know, the most families don't actually appreciate how invasive it is, and how unnecessary. It's just another way of making a few bucks, really.
So, in addition to skipping embalming entirely, can you tell us what are natural burials? What does that mean?
Yeah, sure. So you've got a non-embalmed body. You've got a coffin that is sustainably produced, preferably locally, from something that's going to biodegrade or incinerate without giving off any nasty dioxins, furans, mercury emissions, anything like that. You've got a grave that is shallow so that the body breaks down aerobically without producing any methane. You haven't got a grave that's lined with concrete and or metals or plastics or anything like conventional burial has in the States, I believe. You don't have a memorial made from stone that's been shipped halfway around the world from South America or China or somewhere. And you even go as far as thinking about the flowers that you have on the grave. You know, have they been hothoused in another country? Have they been flown in? It goes on and on. Is there any plastic waste from flower wrappings and ribbons and just creates more waste?
You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palmer.
And today's topic is of life and death, green burials. We're speaking with Rosie Inman Cook, the center manager of the Natural Death Center, calling in from Winchester, United Kingdom. And Rosie, your work is preliminary to focus on giving education around death and the mm-hmm. funeral industry to offer people alternatives to not go with the standard way, the black casket that has huge environmental impact, but offer alternatives. You were just saying, for example, offering a shallow grave. Mm-hmm. I just want to spend another minute on that. The oxygen in 6 feet depth or 8 feet depth is
pretty non-existent.
That's right. It's basically zero. And because of that, decomposition as part of life and recomposition in new life cannot occur. And how deep are your graves?
Well, in fact, in the UK, we don't have a legal minimum depth. people bury at a depth where they feel reassured that there's not going to be any disturbance from any animals. The government here have given us guidelines for natural burial ground operators that 2 foot covering of from the lid of the coffin to the ground surface. Most regular cemeteries do a minimum of 3.
And so where did this idea originate, or was this always the standard, and that's what I heard from you, and then in 1900 it changed, but when did natural burials really come back into the forefront as an alternative? What's the timeline for that?
Well, the first natural burial site opened in the UK in 1993, and we now have 260 odd around the country, and there's new ones opening every month, which is fantastic. We run an association of natural burial grounds over here, and we help support diversifying farmers, landowners, or people who are just inspired that they want to do this as a conservation project. I mean, not only is it great for communities and great for families who have the fortune to discover it, but it's great for wildlife. And so we offer support, and we have a forum and newsletters that go out to all the burial site managers. And we've actually now just opened it up to affiliated people from around the world. So anybody can join up and listen into all our chats and everything. So if anybody out there in America wants to be part of the gang, they're very welcome.
Well, and would they find out that information via a website or a newsletter?
That's on the Natural Death Centre website. Just Google Natural Death Centre.
Okay.
And you'll find us there.
Great. Well, and on that topic, you were talking about the relationship you have with different burial grounds. How are they responding? I know you've been working closely with them, and some of them probably have their own practices to begin with, but how are the grounds responding to these sustainable practices? What are their rules and regulations, their management styles, all the things that make them green burial sites? Not all of them, but brief.
Big topic. There's 2 types of natural burial sites here in the UK. There are the ones that have been set up specifically as natural burial sites, and there are the hybrid sites, which are the municipal cemeteries, which have thought we really should be providing this, and they've set aside a green corner. But they, on the whole, they tend to be, they fall far short of what most families are expecting, whether that's because the person managing them has no idea about biodiversity and wildlife management, and it's just lip service or greenwash, if you like. Private sites, the wonderful thing about them, the private sites, is that they are specifically, and that's their main objective, to be a nature reserve, natural burial ground. They're all so different, which is great, and those differences really reflect the managers or the people who have set them up, their philosophy and their vision for the sites. And so they're all very different. And that's great because it gives, yet again, more choice. What one site might not suit one family and the next one will, whether it's the way how regularly they cut the grass or whether they allow any memorialization on the grave at all, whether they're planting trees or not planting trees. It's all different.
Well, and on that topic, because you're talking about how people find the place that suits them, and you said that you have some information via newsletter and chats on your site, which is naturaldeath.org.uk, and you have been developing partnerships across the country. If people wanted to find resources, because all of this information is so compelling, but if you don't know how to find it, where would they go? Can they find it on your site?
Our website is huge, and it's quite easy to navigate, I believe, I've been told. So, the public are very welcome to have a good look at that. And if anybody's wanting to look into this from a professional perspective, then just email us.
But that's a place where people could go and find out what are some natural burial grounds. And mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, we're not listing the ones in the States because you have your own organizations over there that are starting up now and doing that.
And that's
with regards to sort of in a spirit of collaboration and communication, we're opening our doors from the association's point of view to other people who'd like to become burial site managers.
Yes, and that's part of the second half of this hour of an organic conversation of life and death, green burials, when we look at what's going on here in the United States. Still with us on the phone, Rosie Inman Cook, the center manager and education center, the Natural Death Center calling in from Winchester, United Kingdom. Rosie, stay with us. We'll take a quick break, but we do want to look at home burials. That's something I'm sure our listeners are very interested in learning more about. And I love that you used the word, you know, diversifying when you talked about farms, the idea to be buried at an organic farm. I've not yet thought through how I will pass into the next phase of this life or into ending this life as I know it, and being an organic advocate, being buried at an organic farm. We need
we
to find out.
Orchard burials here too.
Yes.
Wow.
So stay on the phone. Great to talk to you. We'll come back to you in just a few minutes. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
Of Life and Death Green Burials. We'll take a quick break, but we'll come back with more. Stay tuned.
If I die young, bury me in satin, lay me down on a bed of roses, sink me in the river at dawn, send me away with the words of a love song. Uh-oh, uh-oh. Lord, make me a rainbow, I'll shine down on my mother, she'll know I'm safe with you when she stands under my colors. Oh, and life ain't always what you think it ought to be. No, ain't even gray, but she buries her baby, the sharp knife of a short life.
My name is Earl Herrick, and I am the owner of Earl's Organic Produce, a San Francisco Bay Area distributor fully committed to organic produce. From the time one could find organic fruits and vegetables only in natural food stores to now, when schools and fine restaurants feature organic, we have been forging relationships with growers for over 20 years. If you want to offer the finest organic produce to your employees or customers, find us at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Frye Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Frye never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Frye organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Frye Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines without added sulfites, available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Hi, I'm Paul Piscopo, executive chef at the new signature restaurant, The W San Francisco. Trace. It's our farm-to-urban table concept, which means all of our ingredients are locally sourced, sustainable, and traceable back to their natural origins, ensuring a dedication to socially responsible cuisine. We look forward to seeing you soon at Trace. For reservations, visit trace-sf.com. That's trace-sf.com. Or call 415-817-7836.
Bowman College has been offering professional training in nutrition and the culinary arts since 1989. Natural chefs will learn to master a healthful approach to classic culinary techniques, while nutrition consultants become experts in client consultation and the promotion of individualized plans for optimal health. Bowman College, a leader in the field of holistic nutrition and culinary arts. To find out more, visit bowmancollege.org. That's B-A-U-M-A-N college.org.
And we're back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
Today's show is about life and death, green and natural burials. We are talking with Rosie Inman-Cook, the center manager from a big education center around this topic called the Natural Death Center, Winchester, United Kingdom. But before we go back into that interview and look at home burials, here's Mark Mulcahy with the weekly update of What's in Season.
That's right, What's in Season. And on the line, we've got Earl Herrick of Earl's Organic Produce, the voice of the produce market.
Hey, well, I'll tell you, I'm really enjoying these warm days because, you know, shopping the market, it is cold down here in the San Francisco produce market. So at 2 a.m., I'm walking around, I just seeing all this flash and flush orange and shades of orange and yellows. You know, citrus season is here, and it's all over the place.
Well, and, you know, Earl, we mentioned a couple of weeks ago Valencia oranges. What are you looking at now that got you kind of excited?
Well, I'll tell you, the most exciting, well, I'm going to start with Nabel's, because Nabel's, as you probably have seen in the market for the last month or so, but for you and I, Mark, Nabel's are good now. This is really when the sugar gets developed and really become intense. So I'm seeing lots of Nabel's. I'm seeing the Caracara, which is a Nabel with a red interior, and all sorts of Mineolas, Mandarins, and Tangerines. See, I'm a juicer. Every morning I'm getting at it, cutting halves of citrus, and Valencia is the one you want to juice. But this time of year, when the Valencia finishes, it's super high in sugar, like we were talking about last week, and low in acid. So I like to mix Mineolas with that, because the Mineola gives you that profile of tart, high acid, mixed with the sugar, low acid Valencia, and it creates a great morning juice.
Oh, how is this year's harvest, Earl, overall in citrus? Is it good? The weather conditions, were they
beneficial? Yeah, we're seeing probably the best conditions for citrus that we're ever going to see, because right out here in California, as in a couple of areas over the country, we're in a drought. So, see, when it rains, I mean, it's great for the ground, the water table, but it gets the trees absorb too much water. Pickers can't go out and harvest, so you got to wait a couple days. And even then, the fruit's a little waterlogged, so it doesn't have the shelf life. So with no rain, we're getting this intense, huge harvest, very consistent, and I would be making sure this is year you keep a lot of fruit around.
Well, fantastic. So we'll keep a lot of fruit around. And, yeah, and, you know, interestingly enough, for our listeners, since we have listeners all over the country, all over the world, is if you were on the east coast of the United States, you might be getting Florida Nabels now, and those are fully in season. They have a completely different flavor than a California Nabel. So California Nabel is going to be much deeper color inside, and I really believe a richer flavor, because I just tasted the Floridas last week, and the Floridas are going to be a milder flavor, but they're both very good oranges. And, and for those people who don't know what a Caracara is, Caracara is a cross between a Washington Nabel and a Bahia Nabel, both of them originated in Brazil. And so it creates a nice red flesh and a really great texture and a really great color.
Earl, have you had a Caracara yet? Those are my favorite. How are they this year?
Yeah, they're very nice. One of the characteristics for them for me is that it's low acid with that sweetness. Mm. So, you know, you combine that with that nice red interior and you get a nice unique piece of fruit. And I've only seen those around for the last 5 years. How about you, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, maybe a little bit longer, but that was more on conventional. Organic, I've only seen them around for probably like the last 5 or 7 years. So, and the thing about that is, because they are so mild, that's why Earl mixes them for his juice. Earl, that's great. We look forward to talking to you next week. Thank you so much, as always, for joining us and being the voice of the market. And we'll just wait with bated breath to find out what you're talking about next week.
Hey, I'm looking forward to it already.
Okay. Thank you, Earl.
Thanks, Earl.
Thank you.
And for our listeners out there, if you're going to buy Caracaras or Nabels or any of the citrus that's out there right now, you just want to make sure it's heavy for its size. It doesn't have dry skin that's really bright and shiny. And as Earl says, go out there and get them. This is the year of citrus. It's the year of the dragon coming up, but it's also the year of citrus too.
The citrus dragon.
Actually, it is the year of the dragon right now. So yeah,
Mark, what about pixies? I do need to ask.
Not yet.
Really?
They're
still
coming. They're coming.
That's a little late, right?
Well, it depends on what part of the country they're coming from. Actually, I think that I've seen pixies as late as 2 weeks from now. Fremont's pixies. Earl, Helga's bringing in something. You see tangerines, you hear about satsumas out there, and so that's what most of us know, but there are so many varieties, and pixies, the one that Helga's talking about, is one that is almost reminds me of drinking Tang as a kid. It's mm-hmm. just that amazingly sweet flavor that you could eat about 30 of them in a shot. Well, I could. You could probably eat more.
Yes, and they're only around for like two, 3 weeks.
Two
right?
weeks, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because there's not very many growers. They're mostly grown in
pixies.
Ojai. Yeah.
So you are talking about fruit, right? Because we were talking about dragons, and then you transitioned into pixies, and I thought we were going in some kind of sci-fi direction here.
Well, we were. You were right on track. No, we're talking about a pixie tantrum. But thank you for clearing that up.
Yes, for all of us sci-fi geeks
band,
listening.
Great citrus pixies. Yes.
There you go.
Thank you, Mark. That was What's in Season, with an update from Earl Herrick, weekly update from the market, the voice of the market, and Mark Mulcahy, our produce geek. Thank you, Mark.
You're very welcome.
You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I am Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
And today's show is about life and death. We're looking at natural burials, green burials, and the environmental impact of standard funeral services. And with us on the phone still is Rosie Inman Cook, the center manager of the Natural Death Center, calling in from Winchester, United Kingdom.
So, Rosie, in our earlier part of the conversation, you mentioned that there has been a return to home burials. Can you tell us exactly what a home burial is and what are some of the advantages of that? And
there are pros and cons. It is only a minority sport, should I say. There's only a few families that own land and have a place that's appropriate to do that. But my point was bringing it up was to say that actually it is legal and it is possible to do that in the UK. Where you are actually ahead of us is on the home funeral front, i.e. families looking after their dead at their own homes rather than having them carted off to a funeral parlour. That's something that we're seeing people actually finding out about now and in the UK and very keen to do that. So, if, you know, especially if they lost a young person, keeping them at home seems far more natural and a better improved outcome for the bereavement with the family. The advantage with the natural burial sites is that they very much will support and guide families who are doing that and then going to use their facility. You know, that gives them the freedom. It's slower, it's more thoughtful. They don't feel as if they're being processed and taken advantage of. They can do things that are individually and spiritually right for and whatever is appropriate for them as a family.
Listening to your own voice in this process, not just in life and in love, but also at the moment of death. Trusting what your family wants and not going by convention, but really finding out what would work for you as the person maybe passing on or for Absolutely. A family member for you.
And the other one thing I want to get across is that in the UK now, and we're about 15 years ahead of you with the natural burial movement, is that this is now becoming mainstream. It's not seen as some sort of hippie, tree-hugging, lefty, left field.
That was our last question. Actually, how has it been accepted? And like from the media to the people themselves, what's the attitude around green and natural burials?
Typically, I've done conducted hundreds of funerals at my burial sites. Typically, you'll get some elderly people come. They're mourners attending a funeral, and they'll come up to you and they'll sort of sidle up and they'll say, "What is this? What's happening? Is this legal?" And when they leave, they're the ones who come up and grab you by the hand and shake it firmly and say, "My dear girl, that was the best funeral I've ever been to. Have you got any literature?" And that is very, very typical of the way it will go. Is once people discover it, experience it, that fear of the unknown, and they see how beneficial it is and how much nicer. 99% of people who attend one will say, "Oh, God, if anything happens to me, bring me here."
Wow, that's wonderful, and that's a perfect note to end, because we are looking in the next half hour of this show to the U.S. market, how the American people approach this topic and what is being offered, with a great guest coming up. But first, thank you so much, Rosie Inman Cook, the center manager of the Natural Death Center in Winchester, United Kingdom. What's that website again, Rosie, if people want to find out more?
www.naturaldeath.org.uk.
naturaldeath.org.uk. Thank you so much for being on the show, being part of this today, and thanks for your work. Definitely a wonderful, wonderful and important topic to look at in this lifetime, actually. So thank you for what you do.
Thanks for inviting me. Bye.
Thanks, Rosie. It was a pleasure to have you.
You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
Of Life and Death, today's topic on An Organic Conversation. We're looking at conventional and green and natural burials and funeral services. Coming up is Joe Sihe from the Green Burial Council, the founder and executive director, calling from Santa Fe, New Mexico. But first, here's Chef Sita, our very own Sitarani Palomar, with The Holistic Bite.
Thanks, Helga. What a broad category we're talking about today. We're talking about citrus, right? Not any one in particular, citrus in general. And the thing I like about that is it gives me an opportunity to talk about the myriad of health benefits as well as share a couple delicious recipes. So citrus is obviously really great for your immune system, and it's high in antioxidants, which means that it's going to help prevent cell damage from free radicals in the body. And oranges, with their bright orange color, they offer a lot of vitamin C. And then when you look into the reds, the ruby red grapefruits, you're getting lycopene. And it's interesting that some of these vitamins and minerals are fat soluble and some of them are water soluble, like lycopene is a fat soluble. And so I like to put mine in smoothies or fruit salads, and particularly in savory salads, because I find that it's really easy to say, let's put more sweet with sweet. But especially to get the most health benefits out of it, if you were to take your grapefruit, for example, and pair it with a fennel salad with avocado and Parmesan, the fat that you get from the avocado and the Parmesan is going to make that lycopene bioavailable. And similarly, if you're feeling that combination, you could do a variation on it, which is Valencia oranges with fennel salad and Italian oil cured olives. And one of my tricks to doing this is, when I segment the citrus, I do it over a bowl so I can catch all of the juices while I'm cutting out those beautiful wedges of citrus and then squeezing what's left over. So I have all of this orange juice, which is sweet and has that acid that you want when you make a vinaigrette for your salad. So you can use less vinegar and you get that beautiful floral quality of the citrus that's going in the salad to use to dress the salad. So that's my little bit of info on citrus. Get creative. We were talking earlier about all the different types that are out there. You could do some kind of Asian salad with the tangerines that you're finding out there, with some green beans and slivered almonds and sesame oil. Or check out our website, anorganicconversation.com, or Facebook, An Organic Conversation, for the two recipes I mentioned: Valencia orange and fennel salad with Italian oil cured olives, or grapefruit and fennel salad with avocado and Parmesan. And that's your holistic bite.
And you know, Sita, just really quick, Helga, is we mentioned Fuerte avocados last week.
They're
a lower oil avocado, and so they would complement that citrus flavor more than a high oil avocado would, because they're milder and more of that citrus flavor will come out.
Well, and I love it with grapefruit. That's one of my favorite salads, is avocado and grapefruit, or putting it into a smoothie, the same thing. Smoothies with avocado are so luscious and delicious. It's a great texture. And if you put citrus in it, particularly grapefruit, the avocado, the fat in the avocado, like I mentioned last week, will help to make that lycopene bioavailable.
Great.
So good. Oh, I can totally see it. Yes, your holistic bites are always wonderful. I don't know why, but today I can literally feel it and see it. And that's what I will do later today. Yes.
Yes. Helga will be having a smoothie with avocado and grapefruit.
And cut out the wedges and keep the juice. Mm. Thank you, Chef Sita with The Holistic Bite. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
And we're looking at death today. Of Life and Death, Green Burials, today's topic on An Organic Conversation. And with us now, calling in from Santa Fe, New Mexico, is Joe Sihe, the founder and executive director of the Green Burial Council. Joe, welcome to the show. Are you with us?
I am. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for making the time. The Green Burial Council. You are the founder and executive director. What do you provide? What's the Green Burial Council?
The Green Burial Council is an international, independent nonprofit organization that's trying to encourage more environmentally sustainable end-of-life rituals and the use of burial as a new means of protecting natural areas.
Well, we just talked with Rosie Inman Cook from the Natural Death Center in the UK, and it seemed like, and she said so, that the UK is, you know, 10, 15 years ahead of the US in terms of culturally accepting in the society that this is not just an alternative, but maybe actually the better way to go. Where do you see the US, and can you give us an outline of the framework of what is legally allowed here? It seemed like in Europe, or specifically in the UK, anything goes with some guidelines. But I know that in the state of California, you can't just bury yourself in your backyard, or can you?
Well, you can if you have enough acres. There are a lot of myths and misconceptions because we have a horribly underinformed public when it comes to our burial rights and options. Really, what's happened in the U.S. that's a little bit different is that burial has been used more recently as a way to do acquisition, restoration, and stewardship of natural areas, and as a way to help deindustrialize this industry. We've focused a bit more on activating progressive providers who want to let Americans know that they do have these rights and options, that they don't have to have a funeral with embalming, that they don't need to use burial vaults, that they can be buried in their backyard provided they have enough acreage and the county planning department is okay with it. So what we started to do that's a little bit different than the UK model was to very quickly establish verifiable standards. We were very concerned about the potential for greenwashing. And then we embarked on a very intensive outreach campaign to deal with a very entrenched and potentially threatened funeral service industry so that they wouldn't feel diminished by this concept. Mm-hmm. The UK is quite a bit ahead of us, I think, in terms of allowing for alternatives to formaldehyde-based embalming. And, of course, they've never really had burial vaults, even though they came out of the UK as a way of during grave robbing more than a century ago. They never really caught on the way they have here. So we've embarked on a little different program that made sense for the United States and Canada and probably will make sense in some other countries as well. We're expanding into Australia later this year as well.
Can you guide us just in a few minutes through what is legally allowed? You said, you know, in your backyard, if you have enough acreage, what are the kind of the top 10 you need to look at or what people can do or can consider? What are our rights when it comes to our own death?
Well, we can pretty much do whatever we want. With the exception of 8 states, we can have funerals in our own homes. We can handle our own death certificates. We can put a body in a car or a pickup truck and do transportation. I don't think most Americans are ready to do some of those things, but it is our right. And there are a lot of funeral directors out there and cemeterians who are willing to let people know what they can do. Unfortunately, there are a lot that haven't been providing good information, so people don't understand. But people need to know that embalming is never required to have a funeral, never required to have a funeral with a viewing. A casket is never required. A shroud can certainly be buried. Most places, people can be buried in their bathrobes. Of course, cemeteries and funeral homes can have policies which sometimes can supersede state laws. But they do have a requirement, funeral homes in particular, to disclose and to let consumers know that they do have these rights and options. Unfortunately, this is a subject area that people don't want to go near. They certainly don't want to think about it much before their death. And so we make a lot of bad decisions and hurried decisions. What Green Burial is doing, I think, is providing a context that allows people to want to think and talk about death and death care. And that's great. And it's informing consumers of their rights and options in a very powerful way.
And, you know, interesting, Joe, when you were talking, I remember when I was getting ready for the show, I remember reading that funeral homes are actually forbidden by law from embalming your loved ones without your permission, right? Because there's no legal requirements for embalming.
That's correct. They But what really happens is that funeral directors will talk families sometimes into embalming because they believe earnestly oftentimes that there are public health issues. You know, our own CDC has never found a reason to get near funeral service, and 95% of the world has figured out a way to have funerals without embalming. But in this country, mortuary schools were founded by chemical companies that made embalming fluid. Mm-hmm. And they've passed on a lot of misinformation to funeral directors who, I say, in earnest, believe that they're doing the public some good through sanitizing and preserving with toxic chemicals. And, of course, there's not a shred of scientific evidence to back that up. There are a number of ways of doing non-invasive and natural body prep, and we're starting to see funeral homes all over the country, almost 300 in our network, willing to allow families to understand that option.
You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
And today's show is about life and death, green burials. With us, Joe Sihi, the founder and executive director of the Green Burial Council from Santa Fe, New Mexico, here for the U.S. and internationally. Joe, please stay with us. We'll take a super quick break and we'll be right back with more.
I don't want to be the one to say goodbye, but I will, I will, I will. I don't want to sit on the pavement while you fly, but I will, I will. Oh yes, I will. 'Cause maybe in the future you're gonna come back, you're gonna come back around. Maybe in the future you're gonna come back, you're gonna come back.
Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Produce is ever-changing, seasons coming and going. At Earls Organic, we have been sourcing solely organic produce for over 20 years. Since 1988, Earls Organic Produce has been establishing strong relationships with growers and developing a deep understanding of the seasons, so you can offer the most delicious organic produce to your customers, staff, and clients year-round. For organic produce, visit Earls Organic Produce at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
There is nothing more restorative than garden fresh food cooked with skill and served with love. Bowman College has been promoting well-being for more than 20 years by teaching people to cook and eat for health. Launch your career as a nutrition consultant or natural chef and learn to nourish yourself and your loved ones. I'm Ed Bowman, founder and president of Bowman College, Holistic Nutrition and Culinary Arts. Check us out at bowmancollege.org. That's B-A-U-M-A-N, college.org.
Trace, the new signature restaurant at the W San Francisco, is committed to creating an enriching and thoughtful culinary experience. By fusing the vibrant local personality of the Bay Area with a dedication to socially responsible food, Trace ensures all the ingredients are traceable back to their natural origins, locally sourced and sustainable. For reservations, visit trace-sf.com, trace-sf.com, or call 415-817-7836.
Do you feel run down, stressed, overweight, or overloaded? Urban Remedy is a delicious 100% organic juice cleansing program designed to jumpstart your body's natural healing and cleansing abilities. This delicious juice feast, created by leading acupuncturist Nika Pasquale, is rich in vital nutrients, minerals, and enzymes, providing you with all the nutritional nourishment you need to thrive. Delivered directly to your doorstep. Urban Remedy, a convenient way to boost your energy and balance your body. Place your order today at urbanremedy.com. That's urbanremedy.com.
And we are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
We are looking at green and natural burials and the funeral industry today on An Organic Conversation of Life and Death. With us, calling in from Santa Fe, New Mexico, is the founder and executive director of the Green Burial Council, the leading organization here in the U.S. that can answer and help anyone being interested in natural and green burials to find out more of what the rites are and what the impact might be, natural versus non-natural. Joe Sihi, thank you for being with us, Joe, again.
Joe, you were saying right before the break that the Green Burial Council has adopted some practices that have been really successful and beneficial in the States and in Canada, and that might prove to be helpful with other countries too. Can you tell us about what those are?
Well, what we've evolved over the last 6.5 years are verifiable standards for almost all aspects of eco-friendly death care. So funeral homes, cemeteries, product manufacturers, and cremation disposition programs. What it's allowing other countries to do is to evolve those standards in a way that makes sense in their own countries and not have to worry about managing the back end. So what we're going to be launching in a couple weeks is Green Burial Council, sort of international. It's a platform that allows other countries to be part of this movement and to make sure that the environmental aims are legitimate and can be verified. I think in every field there's going to be a real problem managing greenwashing. And what we're trying to do is to get out ahead of that by vouching for documentation, which isn't much, but at least we go through material safety data sheets and conservation easements and deed restrictions and general price lists so others don't have to.
So what are a couple of those examples? For example, do you require a natural cotton or an organic cotton shroud? Do you set a certain standard for the depth of the grave? Like
For example, in the case of a cemetery, we have three different levels of green cemeteries. At the highest level, we do require an extensive amount of survey work to make sure that burial never degrades the ecosystem and, where possible, facilitates ecological restoration. Mm-hmm. And that impacts burial depth, burial density, where burials take place, what kind of zones are set up, and what kind of stewardship mechanism is in place so that those ecological promises can be held up for a lot of years. We do the same thing with products, where we go through and make sure if a product is claiming to be from a sustainably harvested forest, we want to see proof of that. We want to verify if cotton lining is organic. So we go through that. It's an enormous amount of responsibility for a consumer or even a funeral director to do that, and we're trying to take some of the burden away.
Yes.
You know, Joe, we've been talking about, you know, the personal opportunities here and the environmental benefits, but what is your philosophy on the spiritual significance of a natural burial?
Well, it's the spiritual significance that really captivated me. I spent some time working as a Jesuit lay minister and did training as a spiritual director and moved out to the middle of the Mojave with my wife to open up an eco-retreat. And I'd always been very impacted by these early Christian monastics who used to go out to encounter very fierce landscapes and experience the divine on their own terms. That's really what we're talking about here with end-of-life rituals. It's a way to honor the dead and heal the living and invite in the divine on our terms. And green burial, I really feel, allows people to have a sort of level playing field. Our burial customs in this country have, to a great extent, been co-opted. Jewish burial in this country looks far different than it does in Israel today. Muslim traditions have changed, so have Christian traditions. And I think we've been shortchanged to a certain degree, and what we're starting to do is to engage the religious community to work with us to reclaim and reinvent end-of-life rituals in this country. And we had a summit in Santa Fe a couple months ago, a rabbi who started the first green burial ground within a conventional cemetery was there, and was talking about the fact that many Jewish cemeteries, for example, require the use of burial vaults. They allow them to be bottomless and have the casket has some contact. But, you know, in many parts of Israel, Jews are put in the ground with shrouds. There are no Jewish or Orthodox-approved casket that was created in this country, somewhat out of whole cloth, in the mid-20th century. So what we're trying to do is to get a conversation going within the religious community so that people, again, understand their rights and options and can reclaim and reinvent these rituals.
Beautiful.
Yes. Joe, your website, if people want to learn more and find out what Green Burial is all about and their rights and what they can do in their state or county, it's greenburialcouncil.org. Is that the best resource?
That is the best resource, and we have a toll-free number, which is 888-966-3330. We're out there helping people plan services, sometimes at an at-need basis. We're helping people start green burial grounds in their neighborhoods and better understand their options, and we're a resource for this emerging field, but also for consumers, and always happy to respond to emails and calls.
Mm-hmm. So that's, again, that website is greenburialcouncil.org. That's Joe Sihe from the Green Burial Council, the founder and executive director. Thank you, Joe. Your conviction comes through fully, and the importance of this work for you. So thank you for making the time today to be on an Organic Conversation. Great, great to have you.
Thank you.
That was an Organic Conversation of life and death, green and natural burials. Wow. So much I love that Joe just said, we had a topic where churches go green, right? Religiously mm-hmm. green, mm-hmm. the efforts of churches to put solar panels on it and use biodiesel for their buses. And I didn't expect this sentiment that religious communities around the world are now looking at natural and green burials again of a way to shedding convention and making that transition as beautiful and as natural, literally, as possible.
And more accessible, right, to the general public.
Yes.
What I love so much about what he said was that it's letting go of all of those things that might get in the way so that you can really welcome the divine. I think that was so poignant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and do we have time for the mailbag today?
Yes, well, yeah, a quick one, mailbag. Please send us your comments and questions and concerns and inquiries to share@anorganicconversation.com. We love, love, love to hear from you. Whether that's, you know, a comment or a suggestion or just praise, anything that comes, we'd love to hear from our listeners here from the U.S. or internationally. And we had a comment asking which station would feature this show in that person's neck of the woods. And Mark, do you want to talk about that? We have, 13, 14 stations at this point lined up?
Yeah, and we're online and we're on Stitcher, so you can get it in any of those ways. Anywhere in the world you can get the show. And if you would love to have our show on your local radio station, you just let us know at share@anorganicconversation.com, and we'll contact them about getting on your local radio station.
Yes, and because most stations have a website and stream online, you can literally find the show almost at every day of the week during several hours. And then, of course, as a podcast a couple days later on iTunes or Podbean, podbean.com or iTunes, just look up An Organic Conversation and it's right there. All those resources on anorganicconversation.com as well.
iHeartRadio app, too.
Yes.
Yeah. And so I think we just got a few more minutes, but we have time for Helga's organic moment.
Yes. And how poignant. I talked about the gift of giving last week. Being loving, giving, and generous are such wonderful traits. We have talked about the gift of giving many times on this show. However, lately, I'm learning about the importance of another gift we can give, the gift of receiving, truly, deeply, and openly receiving what is given to us. May it be a hug or a cookie someone baked for us or a kiss from a lover. How often are we already out the door or distracted or find another way not to be present, as when we hear thank you and respond with, oh yeah, don't worry about it. Really? Don't worry about it? And worry about what? So if we can fully and wholeheartedly letting in what is being offered, then we are in the same moment gifting something right back to ourselves and the person gifting something to us. That's the gift of receiving.
And that was this week's edition of An Organic Conversation. Thanks for listening.
An Organic Conversation is a proud production of the Organic Media Network. Executive producer is Kristen Ponger. Associate producers, Kristen Ponger. Assistant producer is Lauren Mulcahy.
If you missed parts of this show or for any other episode, you can visit us on anorganicconversation.com or iTunes.
We're your hosts, Helga Hellberg,
Mark Mulcahy,
and Sita Rani Palomar.
And we will be back right here, same place, same time next week. See you then.
Bye bye.
Solid smoking stars, you swing wide. Swing while you're green. Stories all over.